You are now listening to the Someone's Favorite Productions podcast network.
Guten Tag, and welcome to Foreign Film February. Sometimes films are serious, and sometimes films are sad, and sometimes films are funny, and sometimes films make you mad, and sometimes you might find yourself at the end of a film wondering why. We are here to tell you, we are here to show you, we are here to let you hear Foreign Film February music.
Welcome to New World Pictures Podcast, where we're going to talk about every movie released by New World Pictures. Every movie. I'm Ryan.
Wow.
With me, as always, is Mark.
Am I the only person that thought Octung Baby was a terrible name for an album?
Nope. And Erica. My screen shattered. And we are at the end of February. Foreign Film February, where we talk about some of the foreign films released by New World Pictures. Roger Corman liked to release a lot of them. This is our last one.
What?
No.
Goodness! Woohoo!
Yep. You started out so strong.
Sorry, I'm just gonna spend this episode celebrating.
We dressed up June Gloom with another name, and
you got me, guys. You got me.
You were so excited to start, and now that we're finally ending,
yeah,
you can finally relax as we go into more New World movies, but. For the time being, we got to close this one out with 1979's The Tin Drum. I'm sorry. That is Japan's Tin Drum.
So close, Ryan. I'm so close.
Oh, my mistake on that recording. I apologize. That's my fault.
If we could have just spent an hour or two listening to that album, I would have.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we could. We could have discussed every track.
That would have been good.
Every track. Why was Mick Karn pulling away from the band? Anyway, we don't have time to talk about it. He came back for Rain Tree Crow. We can't get into it right now because we got to talk about 1979's The Tin Drum.
There was once a drama who hated the world of grown-ups.
Oscar!
There was once a drama whose scream shattered glass. There was once a drama whose name was Oscar.
Google.
He had two presumptive fathers, one Polish, the other German. There was once a drama who didn't want to grow anymore, but he was a man just the same. He had three mistresses.
Wenn man ihm zu an einen nur denkt, wenn man einmal alles ihm schenkt vor Glück.
was once a gullible people who believed in Santa Claus. But in reality, Santa Claus was the gas man.
That's right, 1979's The Tin Drum, brought to you by... brought to you by Franz's Horsehead Eels. Tired of the same old boring meals? Try Franz's Horsehead Eels for a change. With that fresh water and rotting horsehead taste, it's perfect for any occasion, even when you're allergic.
It really covers two spectrums: those who are allergic to eel and those who are allergic to horse.
This movie was directed by Volker Schlumdorf.
Rolls off the tongue.
Just rolls right off.
Look, everyone, come over, gather around, baby Volkor has been born. Look at him. Love him.
He had actually directed 1975's The Lost Honor of Katharina Blum, or Blum.
Like Judy Blum, or like, is this a Judy Blum book?
Please don't be a New World. Please don't be a New World. Please don't be a New World.
It was released by New World.
Foreign film. Fucking February. Fuck.
His filmography, though, is very long and is mostly unknown to me outside of he directed the TV adaptation of Death of a Salesman with Dustin Hoffman.
Boy, the guy's got a type, doesn't he? Woo!
He does. Seriously. He does.
Loves a saddie.
And also the 1998 thriller Palmetto, starring Woody Harrelson and Elizabeth Shue.
Man, what tragedy befalls someone in that movie?
It's going to be something. But maybe we've seen his best, because good old Volker told Film Talk in 2016, he said, I could say that The Tin Drum was my biggest success, but it also had to do... it also has to do with all the circumstances. The wonderful book, which was published in 1959 by Gunther Grass, came to me. Jean-Claude Carrière would work with me on the screenplay, and then I found little David Benent to do the leading role. So we had this beautiful cinema.
Oh, wow. He described him as little David?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, boy. Wow.
Yeah. Volker. Okay. That's...
Okay. Oh my. Okay.
As he says, okay. It is based on the book of the same name by Gunther Grass, with Schlondorf co-writing the script with French writer Jean-Claude Carrière, as he said. Schlondorf said
they
actually...
I'm sorry to keep interrupting. I know we're not at final questions, but this is also a book? People have read this and viewed this with their eyes?
Not a short book. A 500-page book.
That doesn't surprise me, because it is not a short movie, so...
No. But they created a first draft that gave the film a basic outline, and they presented it to Grass, who felt it needed a, quote, element of irrationality.
Mission accomplished.
So they went back to writing the screenplay, which got very, very long, so they had to trim it back, if you can believe it.
I bet it was like a 10-hour movie that they had to cut back to what did it end up being? 1 million hours? I don't know.
It's a little under 3 hours. 2 hours, 45 minutes. It does star David Benent as Oscar, who was 11 at the time of filming. Schlondorf found out about David when he spoke to a professor at a medical school in Munich who specialized in growth problems. The professor mentioned Heise Benent, David's father, whom Schlondorf had just worked with on The Lost Honor of Katharina Blum, but had no idea that he had a son who was 11 but was the size of a 5-year-old. Originally, Schlondorf had looked at using little persons for the role, but he cast David after spending a day with him and realizing he was perfect and didn't even bother to do a screen test. Bennett is still working as an actor to this day, and he may be most recognizable for his role in Ridley Scott's Legend.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Where he played this little guy, if you remember. Yep,
I do.
Yeah, that's... And was dubbed over by someone else in the movie. Hmm. That's
not
his voice.
Why do you have a picture of that? Why do you have a picture of him as his character from Legend? Why?
Because it came with the Blu-ray set.
Hmm.
Oh, boy.
Came with lots of pictures. Anyway, keep pictures of the whole cast.
Just plus sneak Mia, those in.
Plus Mia you, Sarah.
Can you just sneak those into someone's photo album at some point? Just like sneak one in and just on a random page and see if anybody notices.
Oh! Who's this?
So here's our vacation to the Grand Canyon. Oh, wait a minute. Who's this? Who's this little elf? They had a little loincloth.
Yeah.
I had, at one point in time when I worked at a bank, I put picture frames on my desk, and I'd bought the picture frames, I don't know, in a CVS or a Walgreens or something, and it was just like a picture of a couple, you know, as they do that little insert, and I just left that in there and just kept it on my desk.
I know.
People would say, who are they?
I want to frame that picture of David from his as his character from Legend and put that on my desk. And then have people just wonder, like, is that her son? Is that... what? Oh, no. This is just a character
don't
I love
ask.
From a movie that
don't,
I love.
Don't anyway. Ask. Don't ask.
This is David Benent from Legend.
Yeah.
I mean, duh. Get angry about it. Get really shitty about
when
it.
When people ask.
It's David Benent from Legend.
Idiot.
Okay, you didn't know that? Whatever. Here's where you can watch the tin drum.
Bang your tin drum.
It's on Criterion Channel. It is on Max. There's also a Criterion Blu-ray, but we watched the Blu-ray from Umbrella.
Mm-hmm.
And if anybody wants it, the Blu-ray copy we have is free. You just need to pay for shipping and it's yours.
This is actually the director's cut, which this does not say so. And the reason is that I checked the Criterion site. It seems their version is also the director's cut, which is put together around 2010, around that time. So I'm guessing that's just the version you get of the movie. So if you want to get the version that New World would release, which is only about 20 minutes shorter, that is probably, maybe, I guess, on the DVD, because the Blu-rays are all of the director's cut. So now let's talk about what this movie is about. Mark, what is the tin drum?
Bang your tin drum.
About.
The Grim Reaper attempts to take a multi-year sabbatical in the body of a small German boy.
Mm-hmm.
You know what they say. You know what they say. Reaper's gotta reap.
Oh man, I totally have the same thing. I mean, more or less. I said that this is about a little boy obsessed with a tin drum who attempts to murder every single person he meets.
I mean, 100% true.
It's not.
It's
not
true.
Incorrect. Erica. Be the tiebreaker here. What's this movie about?
This movie is about one of the worst families experiencing one of the worst times in history. It's the worst. Mm, also, there's a drum.
There's a lot of drum. One of the things I hate, and no, we're not at things we love, things we hate, is the amount of drum in this movie. It
way
is,
too much drum.
It's a lot too of much drum.
It's a lot of drum. Yeah.
Yeah.
You talked about the actor that was selected as Oscar. Mm-hmm. Like, do you think for his screen test, they just said, okay, come over here, bury your face into my vagina and say your lines.
Well, to be fair, he had no lines when he had his head buried in the vagina.
I don't also, care. I think that's the test.
Also, as I said, I went back. There was no screen test. He didn't screen test. He looked at him. I think he took him out somewhere, took pictures, and he could see like the different expressions on his face and was like, this is the kid. Also, he was like, I just know this kid's face is going to look great nudged up against a girl's vagina. But but that's another story.
Boy, he was in for a roller coaster when he signed on to do this movie.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah.
As an 11-year-old, you're like, okay, now this is the scene where you're going to bury your face in this woman's vagina. And he's like, wow, I did not realize.
He doesn't actually do that. But that's another story. That's on the Blu-ray. He doesn't actually do it. He filmed it in a way that choreographed it because the woman playing opposite him did not feel comfortable. But we'll cut that out. Don't worry about that.
Which part? Like that whole section?
I cut it out from my eyes and knowledge of it. So if there's a way to do that, please do it.
All right, let's go to the Letterboxd synopsis. We are on Letterboxd, so give us a follow there if you can. Oscar Mazarath is a very unusual boy. Yeah.
Check.
Yep. I wish that was it. I wish that would end there. End synopsis. Refusing to leave the womb until promised a tin drum by his mother, Agnes. And that's news to me. I didn't realize he refused to leave it. Maybe that's in the book, but he seems to come out.
Yeah, I mean, that after they're talking, maybe they were talking about the tin drum, but he's already the age that he is in the rest of the movie. But they film him from his perspective inside the womb.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's,
it was the first time I was very uncomfortable watching this movie.
That marked
my birth of uncomfortableness that continued for just under 3 hours. So
Oscar is reluctant to enter a world he sees is filled with hypocrisy and injustice. Okay. I didn't realize he was reluctant to enter the world. He does decide he's not going to grow, but I didn't realize it was because of hypocrisy and injustice. Again, this might be from the book. Maybe this is the synopsis of the book.
He is a contributor to the hypocrisy and injustice.
Very much so. He seems very much a party to it just simply the catalyst for it, but very often. But anyway.
Also, imagine if someone from Letterboxd read the book versus watching this movie and they're really taking a deep dive based on their readings. Like,
And they're like, wow. They're like, dude, where's the synopsis? He's like, dude, this thing is 500 pages long, man. I'm getting to it. It's a huge book. Give me a minute. They're like,
hey, man, Letterboxd, we review movies, dog. When did you go to onboarding when you started? Or
I thought you meant the book. I thought we were expanding the books.
Oh man. Damn.
Dog, dude. What book did you read for Con Air? You did the review for Con Air. What did you even read, dog? What book were you reading for that, man? Come on, dog.
The novelization of Con Air.
Of Con Air.
I hope there's a novelization.
So many more details. It was so much deeper.
So
you
much
really
richer.
Got to know the characters.
So much richer. Okay, he vows on his third birthday to never grow up. Miraculously, he gets his wish. As the Nazis rise to power in Danzig, Oscar wills himself to remain a child, beating his tin drum incessantly and screaming in protest at the chaos surrounding him. Okay, that's news to me in terms of looking at it from the movie's perspective, but probably very much the case in the book. I mean, I get that banging the tin drum is like a metaphor of like...
Bang your tin drum.
For like, you know, drawing attention to the surroundings and the things that are happening, but I didn't get that he screamed and broke glass out of any protest, outside of the fact that he screams and breaks his teacher's glasses and is like, yeah, I don't want to go to school. Like, that's every kid. Yeah. I get that, but
it's beyond just school. Like, this kid is a fucking little shit. He bangs his tin drum.
Bang your tin drum.
All goddamn day. And when he doesn't get what he wants, he screams and breaks glass all around him. Like, this kid is a walking nightmare.
Yeah.
And this is our hero in this movie. Listeners, just let that sink in for a minute. Just let it sink in.
We're going to go through some moments of the movie. It's nearly 3 hours, so there's no way we're going to... We don't try to do a whole deluxe plot synopsis anyway, but we're definitely not going to do that with this one.
That's on the director's cut of this episode. we go through the whole six hour episode where we dive into the tin drum. It's a deep dive. Nobody asked.
Bang your tin drum.
I'm sure the listeners are already getting annoyed that, like, I keep playing
what
that.
Is
but
that?
Just what is that? Just so you know, just be prepared. I'm not stopping.
That's our version of the drumming.
Right.
If you know,
it's
this,
also
this,
the only way to find something fun about this film. Okay.
Yeah,
we're gonna go through some stuff. It's super fun. So we start the movie with a prologue, which is narrated by Oscar, and starts with his grandmother meeting his grandfather. For reasons I'm not sure why we go there. The grandmother's not a huge character in this, but maybe it's bigger in the book. Who knows? Anyway, it then sets up the strange love triangle between his mother, Agnes, played by Angela Winkler, who, of course, is the lead of The Lost Honor of Katharina Blum. So we will see her in another movie.
Hold on. You're going to breeze right past the grandfather and grandmother meeting. The grandfather's being chased down by some soldiers.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And she opts to hide him under her skirt. While he's under there, he proceeds to just go ahead and insert himself into her. And hence how the mother is created.
Yep.
Like, this is within the first 5 minutes of the movie.
Yeah. I take it back. My uncomfort was not born when Oscar was born. It was born then. It was born under those skirts. It was born under those skirts.
He eventually also takes off and he just dives into a lake and is never seen again.
Yeah.
Exactly. He becomes a matchbook.
Yeah. Millionaire.
Millionaire in the United States.
Yep.
Theoretically.
Theoretically, yeah, they think.
And this movie has a lot of people just hiding under skirts.
Well, everyone hides under her skirts. That's like her thing. That becomes grandma's thing. Yeah,
that's her
kink.
Even
Oscar does that. Yeah. And it's like supposed to be sweet. Like, oh, he's under there too. Like, I'd watch out, grandma. You know, Oscar, you can't trust that kid. I don't literally don't know what he's going to be up to.
He may look young, but he is certainly sexually active.
Yeah, most definitely. So we have a love triangle with Oscar's mother, Agnes, her cousin and postal worker, Jan, played by Polish actor Daniel Olbrychski, and a German chef and eventual Nazi, Alfred, who's played by German actor Mario Adorf, who had just done several movies, a string of movies in Italy, including Dario Argento's Bird with a Crystal Plumage, as well as a bunch of movies with Ferdinando De Leo, like Caliber 9 and The Italian Connection. Alfred ends up being Oscar's father, mostly in name, while the director's cut makes it much clearer that Jan is the father. There's a scene that they have where he even says he wishes that Oscar knew he was the father. That's not in the original. That was just in the director's cut. Which, again, by the way, the director's cut, I should just say, preface this by saying that the director's cut is what he wanted to put out. It's what
Hence
Volker,
why it's called the director's cut.
He always wanted to release it, but because he had a deal with United Artists to release the movie in Europe and the UK, they made it strict, like, it has to be 2 hours and 15 minutes. They wouldn't allow it to be any longer. So this is the version he wanted to put together, but he simply couldn't contractually. So the one thing I could not figure out about the about this section where we meet these three principal parts of this love triangle is, do doctors still do that thing where they grab your crotch and they make you cough?
I mean, lady doctors don't, I guess, for ladies. I've never had to grab my crotch and cough, but I've had to do a lot of other weird things that I don't know if this is the episode or the time I should go into.
I recently went to the doctor and I thought that I might have a hernia, and they didn't grab my crotch, but they did have me turn my head and cough to see if there would be any bulging that comes out of your, I don't know.
I see.
Is not that really that, your that's package, an indicator. But above your package, that indicates that you have a hernia. So yes,
It
actually does still happen.
I thought my uncomfort would end when Tin Drum ended, but yet here we are.
We're talking about Tin Drum, so just get comfortable with your uncomfortableness, because we're...
Bang your Tin Drum.
This is the episode. Also, how aware was Alfred that he was in a love triangle?
Very aware.
He was it. He knew, right?
He absolutely knew and just accepted that That was part of it. It was just...
That was so weird.
That's his lot in life.
Yeah. So weird.
Because that, anyway, to me, was the most unbelievable part of the entire thing. Like, look, I'm a lady with a big face, too. And I don't have, like, multiple dudes fighting over me. So, come on. Really? I find that highly unbelievable.
Well, you've been married to me for a while, so that probably took you out of a lot of...
Are you my Alfred or my Jan?
So, wait, is Jan the cousin?
Jan is the cousin, yeah.
Because Jan also is super horny. Mm. Like, horny at the most mm-hmm. inconvenient times.
Yeah.
For example, Agnes gets upset because of being served eel. She falls on the bed, weeping in despair that she doesn't want to eat the eel. And Jan wastes little time to cop a feel of those nether regions while she's yep. laying on that bed.
How else was he like, going to relax her, Mark? How else? How else do you get somebody to calm down?
Oh, Ryan, I don't know if you... I mean, there are other ways you could do it. You could just
nope.
pat them on their head or
nope. you Erica know, just always talk to does them. That for me whenever I'm freaking out.
I'm uncomfortable, and I thought that it would end when the movie ended, but it persists. It goes yeah. on and on. I'm uncomfortable.
Just because I feel like it's necessary to talk about it, because Oscar, as we all know, he loves that drum. And if you take it away, this is what happens. And so if you haven't seen this movie, and that was like, ooh, that's a little, that's the first time that Oscar screams and breaks glass. And mm-hmm. If that is something that you are not into, you are in for a long ride, because yeah. it is a big part of this movie, because he uses it a lot. Like I said, he uses it to get out of school. He shatters his teacher's glasses. He shatters specimen jars in the doctor's office. He shatters street lamps when he's walking around with a bunch of his pals, which is like, yeah. hey, he actually had pals. You would think that this could just, you know, basically gets homeschooled. Doesn't even go to
did
school.
Did he have pals? We'll get to it later, but I question that. But yes, he shatters glass on buildings. He shatters champagne glasses. But what's more important is that just sweet, soothing scream is yeah. done over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah. Speaking of this triangle of a family, they eventually all head out to the beach and they encounter a fisherman who finds a bunch of eels and a horse head.
Yeah.
And that makes Agnes sick. But also, it turns out she's pregnant. So she gets a double whammy at the beach because she's pregnant. And also, eels are coming out of a dead horse head that some fisherman has pulled in from the water.
I couldn't tell, though, because her actual husband, what's his name again?
Alfred.
He says, you know, that's how we've gotten them before. So I couldn't tell if this is a way that you capture eels is use a horse head as bait, because they don't explain whether they're using that as a fishing lure, but then they kind of allude to it like, no, but this is how it works. You throw out a horse's head, the eels get into it, and then we just pull them out of the horse's head.
That is this movie in a nutshell. Or in a horse head.
The pregnant pause that you just gave, I assume everyone listening to this episode who hasn't seen this movie will also be like, huh?
What?
Yeah, I didn't crunch the numbers on eel harvesting, so I'm sorry. I feel ill-prepared to answer this question. All I will say is it's super gross. I didn't know that was a way that people caught eels. Had a lot of questions following it with it that were like, did he have that on hand? Was that just something that he had available? Where did that come from? Did he carry it all the way down there to the waterfront, then put it on a lure and toss it in? Did he have a net? I mean, I had a lot of questions.
Like bummed when he's like, oh man, this horse head is just no good. I gotta get a new one.
Yeah.
Right. I don't know.
Can you use it a second time or is it a one-time
deal? Yeah, is it
deal?
One and done? I don't know. Yeah, I just left me with more questions than answers. And it's also a very yucky scene. It's real yucky. It is. And real graphic. And
but if there's one thing I'm going to take away from this movie, it's that scene. She gets sick from it, and well, just because it's so wild.
Mm-hmm.
But they do get eels. They bring them back home. Alfred prepares them for a meal, and he forces Agnes to eat the eel dinner, even though she's allergic.
I guess she's allergic, but yet he said that she had it before. So I was a little confused by that. But this sends her on like a real binge for any kind of pickled herring or like sardines. Crazy. And if you thought that watching eels being pulled out of a horse's head is gross, you need to watch Agnes eat sardines out of a can. Mm-hmm. Because that might be even grosser.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Or watch her just eat a full pickled herring.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
she and it's is not crushing like, that. She's eating it like it's like it's a Taco Bell burrito. She's just crushing it.
And it doesn't appear to me like these are fish props. It looks like you a pickled herring. Yeah. Go for it.
It also did not look like those eels that he cuts up on his cutting board were just fakey.
No, those were real eels.
Those are real eels that he just cuts up. So,
mm-hmm.
So if that's something you can't handle, just be warned. But she eats all these fish and she knows that she's allergic to it. She can't handle eating them. And it starts to make her ill and sick. And so Agnes goes out the old fashioned way in a community toilet stall after some guy has taken a dump. And she locks herself in there and says, goodbye, sweet world.
I did like, I couldn't, there is a, just a second. Before she goes into that toilet stall and he's coming out, he kind of gives her that look of like, oh, don't go in there.
Oh, yeah. He's like tucking his shirt in. He's like, what? Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody has to, I guess, use this toilet that's at the bottom of the stairwell. So he was like, oh, no, I didn't realize there's a bunch of people when I came out. I was really.
He actually did crush a bunch of Taco Bell before he went into that
bathroom. Anyway, with no mother around, enter 16-year-old Maria. First as his nanny, and Oscar instantly falls for her and her endless packets of Pop Rocks.
Yeah, it's I looked it up, though. It's a sweetener that you would use for like beer brewing. It's like a natural sweetener.
I think I looked up from one of the ones that she uses at the beach. It's called Brass Pulver Himbeer. It's like a powdered lemonade.
Oh, I didn't get that one. It was another one that I looked up, like a white Weisterer. I don't have it in front of me.
Yeah,
but
there's a couple different packets that they use, but I believe you can see at one point they have one on their table, and it looks almost like neon green, but I think it's like lemonade. You could also it also had other flavorings as well.
Basically, modern day equivalent would be if you went and grabbed pickup sticks.
Yep.
But you didn't use the stick. You just stuck your finger in the powder and just ate it straight up. Or had a friend of yours spit, like pour it on your hand, have a friend of yours spit on it and then eat it. Which, I mean, any of us would do. You know, oh, my mouth is so dry. Could you spit on this? Haven't we all asked that question?
And it becomes a moment between him and Maria. And I don't blame either of them because it's super sexy.
Ew.
Just spitting on some powdered lemonade and just in your hand and then being like, ooh, oh my. Look at the, I mean, it is, yeah.
And it quickly becomes the calling card for want to get down.
Yep. He just grabs one of those packets and he's like, hey, I'm ready. I'm ready. It's
like ringing the dinner bell for sex.
Unfortunately for Oscar, though, his dad also has
still uncomfortable.
That's right. Erica's uncomfortable, and this is not Sextember, where she kind of like, you just gives into it, you know? Like,
thank this God one. This is not Sextember. This would be doing the opposite for people. Ugh, gross. I'd be so pissed if we watched this during Sextember. Ugh.
Oh boy. Anyway, unfortunately for Oscar, his dad also has a fondness for Maria. And with a little nudge from Oscar and his tin drum, Maria eventually gives birth to Kurt, Oscar's brother's son.
Yeah. I know we're not at favorite scenes, but one of my favorite scenes is when Oscar holds brother's son Kurt. And brother son Kurt is a baby and almost the same size as him.
Yeah.
And it's just, you can tell that Kurt is not comfortable and neither is Oscar in that moment. Yeah.
They had to shoot that real fast. Like, baby, he's not happy. Let's go. Maria is not the only one enjoying time with young boys, though granted she's 16, or at least the character is. The actress, I don't know. So is his neighbor, who is caught having too much rope fun with the Hitler youth he hangs out with. So,
rope fun.
I point this scene out because that neighbor is played by Heinz Benent, who is the father of David, who's playing Oscar. Mm. So when Oscar comes in and finds him having hung himself, that's just 11-year-old David finding his dad, Heinz, pretending to be dead and hung himself. So
doesn't this movie sound fun? La la la, la 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 la, put it in, have some friends over and do a movie viewing, pop some popcorn and have some snacks and serve everyone pickled herring and eels and have a good old time.
Oh, man. That's just, what'd you do over the summer, David? Oh boy. Though Oscar is convinced that Kurt is his son, he immediately runs off with his old circus pal Bebra and Bebra's lady pal Roswitha, who entertained the troops with their act. Oscar's screaming skills come along. He's able to now etch glass, so he is put into their act, and pretty soon Oscar also puts it into Roswitha, because Oscar is a little rascal who cannot contain himself.
Mm-hmm. In between all of these scenes, I can't impress upon the listeners enough how much fucking drum playing is going on. There is a lot of drum playing in between all of this stuff.
There is a lot.
And
there's
talking and sadness and...
And then World War II,
we're in the midst of, you know, the uprising of the Nazis and World War II. We eventually get into that. And that's what they are doing. They're actually going off and entertaining the troops, the three of them, the Nazi troops. But that's during World War II. So we're well into the war at this point. And unfortunately, Oscar then loses Roswitha because, and for reasons I completely understand, Roswitha, even when under fire from the Normandy invasion, she just needed that cup of coffee in the morning. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I get it. Mm-hmm. I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you got to do what you got to do. You're like, this is going to be a long ride on the back of a military truck. I need a little cup of Joe to get me that.
I need to pick me up, y'all. I'm going to need to pick me up. I can't do all that. And unfortunately, she pays a dear price.
What really, if you were to ask her, would she have wanted it any other way?
I think she felt great about it. I think she felt fine with all of it.
She was like, listen, if I don't get the coffee, I'd rather be dead. So.
At least there's a chance. I don't think she gets any. Maybe she gets a bit of the coffee in her mouth. So I think
she does.
You know
she, gets and she gets a sip, and has that look on her face of, oh, the sweet nectar touching my lips.
So glad I did this. So glad.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Oscar no regrets. Sip.
Explosion. Oscar returns home where his dad regrets his allegiance to the Nazis and tries to protect Oscar from them. But it doesn't matter anyway because the war is over. By the way, those scenes where he really regrets and he tries to hide Oscar away, again, that's all part of the director's cut. Wasn't in the original version.
Mm.
But don't worry, Oscar still finds a way to kill his dad by slipping by Alfred Alfred his Nazi pin while they're under under while the Russians have come into their basement, and Alfred for whatever reason decides to swallow it and starts to choke, and they don't understand what's happening to him, so they shoot him. Well done, Oscar. You did it. Mm-hmm. Get on that train and head to Germany, buddy. You did it. You done did it.
Yeah. For those of you keeping a tally at home, since we're at the point in the movie where Oscar has led his uncle, his dad uncle, into a Polish post office.
Yep.
Where his uncle dad died. Yep. Also, his other uncle died in the same process. Mm-hmm. He's watched his mom overdose on pickled herring and die.
Out of guilt, I should say. I mean, she's guilty because of the way that right. she had Oscar, and now she's about to have another kid, and it's still Jan as the father, so she's just, you know.
But he doesn't do anything to, like, alert family members or try to help her mom. He just sits and observes her playing his tin drum.
Bang your tin drum.
Until she collapses and dies in what had to have been a blown-up bathroom. Then you have his circus friend lover who dies, and now his dad dies. This, I mean, anybody that gets near this kid for any extended period of time mm-hmm. is dead in this movie.
Oh, don't forget about the toy maker. That was his friend.
Oh yeah, oh, the yeah. toy maker also.
The toy
died.
Maker, yeah,
right. Mm-hmm.
Who's also in love right. with his mom.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, and all those nuns who are picking up shellfish on the beach in Normandy.
Right. He's just also right. having sex with the woman whose husband is the rope workout
yep.
Youth lover.
Yep.
Hitler and he
youth,
dies.
Yep. Yep. And he dies because he gets caught. Mm-hmm. And then she tries to turn him in once he returns from his USO tour. Not USO, but I don't know.
Yeah, well, not USO. No. Whatever the equivalent was. Yeah. And then he even goes to Normandy to look at the barricades or that they've put up and the bunkers that they've created, and on his watch they decide to shoot six nuns that are looking for shellfish on the
right.
beach.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, this guy is the kiss of death wherever
yeah,
he goes.
It just follows him everywhere. Yeah.
Yep.
And on that happy note, let's go to a commercial break, and we'll be right back.
Are you a film fan who loves the ultimate home video experience? Look no further than The Disconnected. Your host, Ryan Verrill, is your go-to source for the latest and most accurate information on home video releases, exclusive interviews with industry insiders and filmmakers, and has established a thriving community where every film and physical media enthusiast feels welcome. From hidden gems to blockbuster hits, The Disconnected brings you insider knowledge and a welcoming space to share your love of cinema. Watch every Thursday night at 9:30 Eastern, 6:30 Pacific for the live announcements show and follow The Disconnected on social media to stay updated. Subscribe to The Disconnected on YouTube or on the podcast provider of your choice and dive into a world where every movie night is an adventure.
And we're back, and it is time.
It is time for things we loved and things we hated.
That's right. We're going to talk about things we loved and things we hated about the tin drum. Mark, let's start with you. What's something you loved?
You know what I loved, I'll just say I love, is I love sort of the, I guess you could say the chorus, but I would say it's still kind of the, well, it is the chorus right before the bridge in Japan's talking drum. I'll just play it for you.
Now I'm scared. Now I am lost in mm-hmm. All these things were never done. Your burning bridge, my soul.
I mean, between the bass line, the drums are just, you could have done a basic 4-4 beat. They don't. The synth layers are amazing. It's just, it's a great song.
Erica, what's something you loved?
I don't know that there's anything that I loved, Ryan. To be perfectly honest with you, I don't think I loved anything. I love when it was over. I love when it ended. It does eventually end, and I was like, phew, okay. I love that. Love when it was over.
I will say I love that we got a movie that gave us a perspective of World War II from a German perspective. Now, I'm not sure I understood a lot of what that perspective was.
Mm-hmm.
I maybe am just not smart enough or know enough about World War II, or maybe I'm just too ingrained with knowing the American perspective. I don't know, but because this movie was very widely embraced at the time of its release, but there's something about it that just I missed, and I'm interested in seeing movies about World War II from a German perspective that isn't like, you know, merely Nazi propaganda, but something about how people dealt with how Nazism sort of, and how that autocracy sort of came to be. This movie, maybe I'm just not smart enough to get it, is what I ended up thinking.
I think it was all the screaming and drum playing that probably threw you off a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think I missed in, and as much as I think for a little boy, he's doing such a great job and putting on such a good performance. But to me, he seemed like such a petulant little child who just hated everyone and didn't want to grow up because everyone sucks. And he just wanted whatever he wanted. And I wasn't like, oh, what a cool kid or what an interesting person. Like, that's where I think the book and the movie, it's maybe there's just, I don't know. I have to think that the Letterboxd synopsis writer loved the book. So I have to think there's something in that book.
Right.
I don't know.
At 500 pages, there's got to be something in it.
Yeah, there's got to be. There's got to be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Sometimes people write things that aren't great. I mean, that's also possible, you know? Also, you could finish that book and be like, ugh. Anyway.
Even Billy Shakespeare has some duds, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
Okay, let's switch to things we hated. Mark, what did you hate?
There's a lot we could cover here, but one of the things that I hated.
But this isn't the director's cut of the episode.
Yeah, this is not the director's cut.
It's an import.
Yeah, it's very hard to get, and it doesn't play on any American audio systems. It's only European. But I recognize that this movie, it won an Academy Award. And therefore, to many circles, it is revered. It must be.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are people that are listening to this episode that have a complete opposite opinion. But I just didn't like it. And I could pick apart so many reasons why I didn't like it. But the thing I think that jumped out at me and annoyed me the most was just the random overcranking of the film for no good reason.
Oh, yeah, that's in the beginning. That's in the beginning of the movie, yeah.
Even in the middle when they're playing cards, they overcranked the dinner scene after the funeral, and they're playing cards when his not real dad died. They overcranked that, too. I'm like, why? Are you trying to get some sort of comedic element out of this? Because it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah,
it's not like a car chase that was too slow, and we have to speed it up a little bit. They're playing fucking cards.
Scat, I believe.
I've never played that game.
Me neither. Don't know.
Never seen that offered at a casino.
Oh, I did like that scene because in that scene where they're in the post office, I had made this joke because the guy that's trying to get the tin drum.
Bang your tin drum.
For Oscar that gets shot, and then they play cards with him. He dies in the card game before he can play, and Oscar's dad uncle like turns to the side, and I just said to Erica, is like, oh, I had the best hand. And then he even says, I had such a good hand. And I was like, ah, I knew I got it.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that was their humoristic that was their German sense of humor there. So yeah.
I don't Erica. Think he was his dad uncle though, because weren't they cousins?
Yeah, it was a dad cousin. Yeah, you're right. It's a dad cousin.
The
you're
dad
right.
uncle cousin. The dad cousin. Yeah.
It doesn't make it better or right, but it wasn't his... Yeah. It's not his uncle.
But it was actually... Because it was actually his dad. But yeah. Erica, what did you hate?
I hated all of it. I think if you've listened to any prior episodes at all, dear listeners, you know that a lot of times I absolutely judge movies by their covers, and my own rating system for a lot of these movies is it fun? And would I rewatch it? And for this movie, I would say no and no. it's not my cup of tea. I think
sure.
I think this movie, for me, won an Academy Award because the subject matter is heavy and dense, but it isn't fun to watch. It's not enjoyable. For me personally, again, this is things I hated. So I didn't enjoy it. I didn't find it fun. There isn't anybody in the film that's likable. And maybe that was the whole point. Maybe that's the point. Maybe that's the takeaway that, you know, during the Nazi takeover, also people were just terrible who weren't Nazis. I don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what the letterbox should have said. In addition to Nazis, other Germans are also terrible.
So. And Polish a lot because
other Germans and Poles. I did not enjoy this one. This was a really really tough watch. I won't be rewatching it anytime soon. I won't be shocked if it comes up on my bottom five. And I won't be winning any awards for my deep dive and into critically acclaimed films. But I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I mean, I hated for me just the fact that I was kind of into the idea of it. I'm really certainly into the idea of Germans sort of facing what happened in World War II. And I know it has a lot of magical realism, but I just was, I hated that I didn't have a moment where I was like, I got it. I understand what's happening here. And I just didn't get into it. And I hate that for me. We'll see you at the Lost Honor of Katharina Blum, Boko Schlondorf, and we'll see if maybe I'll have more luck with that one. But let's switch to our favorite scene. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
My favorite scene, this goes back to what you were saying about Oscar having friends. When he's with his friends and they decide to all make piss soup and then make him drink it.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's the only time someone gives him a little back of what he deserved. Like, he's such a little shit, and everyone else is either super nice to him or just babies him and protects him. But leave it to other kids to be like, nah, we see through this. You're a piece of shit. Drink the piss soup.
Yeah, let
him lead a march down the road, though, just for like the fact that he could like take out some street lamps. And I was like, wow, normally I think people would be like, you're weird, and run the other way. But
well, they eventually did know that, and they were like, we'll just convince him that we're all bros, and then we're gonna have him drink the piss soup. Which you do get a shot of a, say, 9-10-year-old kid legit pissing in a soup bowl. That's some real piss soup they got going.
Erica, what was your favorite scene?
Favorite scene. That would imply that I liked it and enjoyed it.
Is this a scene where you enjoyed any part of it?
Boy, that is a tough one.
How about the young boy's perspective of what an orgy should be like?
That again just made me uncomfortable, especially learning that he was 11 and probably stood and actually watched that and probably did a lot of this stuff. And like,
the orgy part is kind of off. I don't know if he saw all of that, but also like, here's the thing about that scene. Remember, he is a little boy to everyone, and everybody thinks that he is just simply not growing up, and he speaks in a kid-like tone to everyone else. But remember, when he first goes to the circus and he meets his circus buddies, he talks to them like totally normal. So he is putting on an act as if he doesn't know. So in actual fact, he does know exactly what he's reading.
Okay, so he knows what he's reading, and he just has a really fucked up idea of what an orgy should be like.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole Rasputin, you know, thing that he's talking about, that she's reading to him, but he pulls it off the shelf, pulls that book off. But, you know, and she's reading that section to her friend, mm-hmm. thinking that he doesn't know. But he does know, because he's actually not like a little baby like he pretends to be around all the adults.
Yep.
Which, again, to me is like, who is this sociopath that we're mm-hmm. following through this story, who is like, I'm real horny for like an orgy, and I guess this is the only way I get to experience this, is if you read it out loud and I can dream it up. And it's like, and I'm going to pretend I don't know at all.
If my mom and her friend read it out loud.
Right, right. You read it to my mom and then I'll think about it.
And the and mom, like, actually yikes. Asks, do you think he understands it? And then they proceed to read it out loud.
Right. She's like, nah, not him. But he does know. He knows all of it. Because he can under... I mean, yeah. Yeah. So guess not that one. Do you have another scene, Erica?
I don't. I really don't. Wow.
Okay. Well, we will give
this
you that
one. This one was rough. This one was rough.
NWPP first here.
Yeah.
I think the scene where Oscar hides under the stage during the Nazi rally and he gets everybody to do a waltz because he's playing drums under there, I guess that's the best scene, because it's at least the scene where I was like, okay, I'm getting a little bit of like, this is him playing the drum and commenting about what he's seen. But really, my favorite scene is when Agnes leaves Oscar with the toy shop guy and she says, watch my son. And then she goes off to have sex with her cousin. And he's like, don't worry, I'll take care of him like a little prince. And then Oscar immediately leaves the store without the guy saying a word. And right. then he
not only leaves the store, he climbs that bell tower and
he goes down the street. He follows his mom. He checks them out. He watches what they do. And then he climbs up into a bell tower, screaming and breaking glass and banging on his drum. And the guy walks out of his store like, Oscar, where are you? Yeah. It's like, bro, he has had a day while you haven't paid any attention to him. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He left and did so much stuff.
He has seen some shit while you were sitting in your toy store.
Mm-hmm. So Agnes has got to be like, well, never again will I let you watch him. Because, dear God, dude, I asked you for one favor. You're like, sure, I'll take care of this sweet little boy, and let me just turn my back and ignore him. And out he goes. Oh, he's gone. Oh, hours later, whoops, where's Oscar? Oh, man. Yeah, that was amazing. All right, let's get into some final questions. Here are our final questions for the tin drum.
Bang your tin drum.
Why did the doctor have a baby in a jar?
I think that when you, like all doctors have that somewhere.
That's so
I think
gross.
when you get your
what
doctorate, they give you a baby in a jar.
I thought he was just pickling it. Pickled baby is delicious.
That's how you catch eels.
Ew!
if you don't have a horse head handy.
Ew!
All right, let's just check. We often have mentioned how Mark is the Siskel of this podcast. But let me just give you... let me see which one you think you might be, because here's a little bit of what Roger Ebert and Gene Siskel thought of this movie. In fact, Roger Ebert says here, he only gave the film 2 stars out of 4, and he said, I must confess that the symbolism of the drum failed to involve me, which I'm like, wow, boys, that summed me up too.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a quote here, and here are the central problem of the movie. Should I, as a member of the audience, decide to take the drum as, say, a child's toy protest against the marching cadences of the German armies? Or should I allow myself to be annoyed by the child's obnoxious habit of banging on it whenever something's not to his liking? So,
yes.
Even if I buy the wretched drum as a moral symbol, I'm still stuck with the kid as a pious little bastard. That's his review.
Yo! All right.
100%
Gene Siskel, however, gave the film a full 4 stars out of 4.
I resign being the Siskel of the podcast. Jeez.
He said it was quite shattering, quote, and also one striking image after another.
Team Ebert.
I've never been more Ebert than I am right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So... I said earlier how the book is quite long, and they actually had to cut down the script. In fact, when the movie ends is only about roughly a third of the book. So there's another whole section of the book.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There is a birthday present there's waiting more. To be given to you.
Oh, no, thank yeah. you. No, thanks. I'm good.
So all listen, right. here's after he Oscar takes the train to Germany, there's more things that happens. I'm going to give you three options. Which one do you think is true?
Okay.
Of the book?
All three. Okay. All three.
A. Oscar and Maria marry and raise Kurt, who becomes mayor of the town.
Okay.
That's
it.
That's A. B.
Plausible.
Oscar joins a jazz trio and becomes rich and famous.
Okay. Okay.
C. Oscar eventually screams too loudly and loses his voice forever. That's C. What do you guys think? Which one do you think happens in the book?
I'm going to go with C because it just plays into, like, there's always tragedy around every corner.
Okay. Erica? Which one do you think?
I'm going to go A because, of course, everything would work out for him and he would get the girl and get to raise his son, because that's the one that will piss me off the most. So A.
Okay. It is actually B. He joins a jazz trio.
Oh.
What?
And his record. He becomes rich and famous. He also falls for like a nun, I think, and she doesn't take his advances. And then eventually he finds that like her body part and she's been murdered, and then he just allows himself to be arrested for her murder. And he goes to like a sanitarium, and that's where he's been writing his memoirs here, which we've all been reading.
Wow.
What the hell?
Wow.
Just when I thought one answer could piss me off the most, I'm more pissed off about how it actually ends.
He joins a jazz trio, of course.
A jazz trio.
Wait, at least is the jazz trio called Grandma Skirts?
No, it's not.
Then I'm out. I'm back out.
He joins a jazz trio with no kick drum or hi-hat, just the tin drum.
They're called the Rhine River 3 Jazz Band. That's what they're called.
Shit. They've got to be terrible.
Some quick research. Here we go. Apparently, originally, this was going to be in English with an all-star international cast. But I believe Schlondorf explained, like, once they actually got Gunther Grass involved, the guy who was the writer, things kind of changed. And so I think once they got his true permission, it had a $4 million budget.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Schlondorf said that the budget was, quote, "the financing of my film was certainly made easier by the international success of directors like Fassbender, Herzog, and Wenders." Mm. Filming started in the fall of 1978, filmed mostly in Germany and a bit in Poland, but the post office scene was filmed in Zagreb, Yugoslavia.
Mm.
It was a huge hit at Cannes in 1979, though novelist Gunter Grass missed the premiere because he was getting married. It won the Palme d'Or, or the Golden Palm Award, along sharing it with Francis Ford Coppola's Apocalypse Now.
Wow.
So according to Khan, this movie is as good as Apocalypse Now.
Well, that's an indictment on Khan right there.
They were into longies.
For sure. Then.
Now, in Roger Corman's book, his book about how I made 100 movies in Hollywood, never lost a dime. This is what he says about picking up the rights to Tin Drum.
Bang your tin drum.
He says the most we ever paid for the rights to a foreign import was $400,000 for vocaler Schlondorf's The Tin Drum. Barbara handled those prolonged on-off negotiations quite effectively. They came in wanting $750,000, and we came in offering $300,000. It drew over $2 million in rentals in the U.S. and Canada, though not, I guess, in Ontario, where it was banned.
Same with Oklahoma.
But that was in the 90s. Oklahoma was in the 90s. That's when it was when they tried to get Blockbuster involved because they were renting it. So that was after that. I'm talking about in theaters. They banned it. Now, Barbara Boyle was the lawyer at the time. And of course, in Roger Corman's New World Pictures, Volume 1, she goes through a very long story about how she got the rights. And she says that she was at Cannes and she spoke to Frank Moreno, who was also in acquisitions. Frank said they wanted $400,000. And Barbara said to him, how about $300,000 as an advance against your share and some really good terms in the back end? That's what she was telling him as an offer. She was trying to talk to a producer of the film, and he said, can we meet tomorrow? I told him I was leaving Cannes at noon, but we could certainly have coffee. We met the next morning, and he said, I've given this careful consideration. I'm not asking for $400,000. I'm asking for $500,000. I looked at him and said, thank you very much for meeting me and coming this morning. I have to catch my plane. And he said, shaking my hand, oh, madam, why? I told him yesterday you'd asked for $400,000, and I thought we'd meet somewhere in the middle. He had heard I was a really, really tough negotiator, and if I had offered $300,000, it must be worth $500,000. I said, this is the kind of negotiator I am. Tough or not, when I make an offer, it's going to be somewhere in the vicinity of where I end up. Your job is to find out where I end up. You don't change your request on me. I got my luggage and walked away. When I came back, Roger said, you got Renee's film. I'm so happy. What happened to the tin drum? Bang your tin drum. I told him the story and Roger said, good for you. What did Frank think it would make? I told him Frank said it would make about $500,000 a producer share, so I was willing to go to $400,000. But something with a $500,000 advance, which requires $2 million box office, was too close to comfort for me. So months pass. And Volker Schlondorf calls her and she gets on the phone and he says, Mrs. Boyle, I know you want to acquire the tin drum. Bang your tin drum. And I know you regarded my film, The Last Honor of Katharina Blum, as not so financially successful for you. I'm sorry the deal did not work out. I said, the real mistake in my business is requiring films that are unsuccessful. I must try to insure against risk. I hope the tin drum. Bang your goes out and earns a lot of revenue. He told me that it had never gotten U.S. distribution. She says she would give them $400,000, which is what the guy asked me for, which is far more generous than I needed to be. We made the deal. It went on to win an Academy Award and made a pile of money. It's a brilliant film. That's what Jesus says about the negotiation. Roger tried to say it was $750,000. They actually said $500,000. She went with $400,000, not $300,000. She said if they did $500,000, it would have to make $2 million. That's what it did make. So did they make a ton of money off this movie? I don't know. But they talked about it like it was a huge success. I think for Roger, if they make a little money and they win an Academy Award, he was very happy with it, which it did. It won the Academy Award in 1980 for foreign language film. And that's it. There that is go. It for the tin drum and for tin drum. February is over, guys. That is it for foreign films for now. We had a bunch of wild foreign films, but now we're going to get back to what we do with this podcast.
Get back to our roots.
This year, I think, is going to be about sequels. And sequels to our theme months. And next month is no exception because we're going to do Prison March 2. We're going to get back to some women in prison movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
From foreign films into women in prison movies, and only the way we can in this podcast, because New World Pictures Podcast, and you can find out all of our episodes, listen to it, find out all our information, our socials, buy a t-shirt there as well. Buy a t-shirt. We've got a bunch of designs there. In fact, a brand new design that's on our website. Go to our website, newworldpicturespodcast.com, and we'll see you next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, a part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.